This is Digital Story Podcast number 528, April 19th, 2016. Today's theme is Handling Harsh Light. I'm Derek Story. I've had people walk up to me when I was working and remark, "Oh, it's such a beautiful, bright day. How wonderful for photography. You must be thrilled." All the while, I'm thinking, how am I going to handle this harsh light? Yes, indeed. Harsh lighting conditions are a tough challenge for photographers. And that's the focus of today's show. The reality is, you know, we don't always have control when we have to take pictures. Your niece's birthday parties, weddings, travel photography, and events all seem to take place in the middle of the day. And there we are with camera in hand. And this really came home to me this last weekend while we were working at the San Francisco Street Photography Workshop. We had a fantastic workshop. I mean, really terrific shooters, as good as we've ever had at any workshop. Wonderful weather, beautiful, bright conditions. And it was just fantastic being outside. So on the morning shoots, we were in great shape. You know, we would leave in the morning and, you know, the first few hours were wonderful, as you would imagine. Then we got to midday. Well, we're at a workshop. We're not going to turn around and go back to the hotel just because the light's a little harsh. You know, we have 3 days to take as many pictures as possible, to learn as much as possible, to practice as much as possible. So we're not going to hang out just at the edges of the day when the light is sweet. It doesn't work that way. So in the middle of the day, because we had such beautiful weather, just like people who come up and say to us, it's a beautiful day for photography, when it's harsh and contrasty. So we had to figure it out. And we did. We absolutely did. So as we were working on our images on Sunday, and the way the workshops work is, you know, we shoot and have classroom, shoot and classroom, all that kind of stuff. And then Sunday afternoon, we have an afternoon lab, so everyone can kind of finish up their shots. And then we do class presentation. So during the lab, you know, I'm kind of chatting away. It's the first time over the whole course of the workshop I can really put my feet up and other people have stuff to do. Other people are under pressure. And I'll say, well, you know, what should I talk about this week for the podcast? And one of the participants, Mary, said, you should talk about harsh lighting. I mean, that was one of the big themes of this workshop. And you always like to talk about what you're doing. Well, this is what we've been doing for 3 days. And I said, you know, that's a great idea. So that's why we're talking about it this week, because we're coming into the time of year when it's going to be warm, in at least north of the equator. And anything from, oh, I don't know what, 10 in the morning to 5 in the afternoon, it's going to be pretty contrasty, going to be pretty bright and contrasty. So I have some tips for you. I have 5 tips. And not only are these tips that I've been using, but these are tips that other photographers in the workshop embraced. And I tell you, when we did our class presentation, there were just as many shots from the middle of the day in their presentation where they pick 8 shots that they want to talk about. There were just as many from the middle of the day as there were from the edges of the day. So I think that really says something to their skill and creativity for handling those conditions. All right, here's the first one. Switch the monochrome mode. Nearly every digital camera has a black and white mode, and many of them these days are customizable, in part because black and white photography is very popular. You know, we used to say black and white photography is very popular right now. It's always been popular. It continues to be popular. It will always be popular. Many of these cameras have black and white controls. And the thing about black and white is black and white can look very good in the middle of the day. You have those rich blacks and you have those, you know, those bright whites. And then hopefully get some grayscale in there, some detail. And they are just absolutely gorgeous. And the thing about shooting black and white is that on many cameras, if you shoot RAW plus JPEG, and you have to check your particular camera, on my Olympus, it works this way. If you shoot RAW plus JPEG, you have the black and white shot, and then you still have a RAW file. You still have a RAW file to play with. So the JPEG will be black and white, and the RAW will be RAW. Everything. It has everything. And I tell you, there was some great black and white photography from the workshop, and a lot of it was shot during the hot part of the day. Next, experiment with infrared. Now, this is something that I brought up, and we weren't prepared to do it. I didn't have any IR cameras that had been modified for IR, or any filters, but this is something that I have done with great success at other times. And basically, there are two ways to go. You can test your camera to see if it's, you know, good for infrared photography. All cameras will do it to some degree, but some are better. And what I do is just turn on the LCD, so you're in live view, and then I take a TV remote, an infrared remote, point it at the camera, and if you see the red light on the LCD, you know that your camera definitely has some level of the ability to record IR. And then you just have to get a filter, like an R72 or something like that. So that's one way to go. Now, those filters are very dense, so you will have, you know, fairly slow shutter speeds when you use IR, and probably pretty high ISO settings. So then the other way to go is to have a camera modified where it takes out the blocking, the IR blocking filter, and then that camera is an infrared camera. And that's a fun way to go too. That's about $300 to $400 for the modification. I've never modified any of my cameras, but I have gone the filter route and I have loved the shots. Now, the reason why I bring all this up is because IR thrives in the middle part of the day when it's hot. It's a great time to use this technique, and the images are really interesting. They're really fun and really interesting. So that's another thing to go if you know that you're going to have to be shooting in the middle part of the day, and especially if you're going to be shooting architecture and landscape. Don't forget about fill flash. I tell you, you know, we get so used to shooting without flash, some of us, that we forget that flash is very helpful in bright, contrasty situations. And I'll tell you, when I do event coverage and the event is in the middle of the day, I always have a flash with me. And most of the time I just leave it on the camera and then turn it on as needed. But what fill flash does, especially for people, is that it balances out lighting on the face. You know, because part of the problem, you know, when the sun's up high, it casts these ugly dark areas, and then we have these, you know, really hot areas. The eyes go dark usually. And if you bring a fill light in from the front, first of all, it will even out those tones. Now, you'll still have some shadow area and you'll still have some hot areas, but it evens it out. It makes it, you know, it takes it from unpleasant to quite pleasant. Now, the little pop-up flash on your camera for a bright sunny day might not be strong enough for a fill flash in this situation. So in that case, you may want, you know, a bigger shoe mount flash. This is really good for portraits. So when I was talking about IR, that's good for buildings and architecture midday, but fill flash is really good for portraits midday. And event coverage, it's fantastic. And the cameras are so smart that they will balance the backdrop, they'll balance the scenery with the fill light on the subject. And it looks great. I mean, I used to say, when people ask me for one tip that will improve my photography, that will make my pictures look dramatically better, and that one tip for me for many years was to use fill flash for portraits outdoors, especially for event coverage. So don't forget about it. And like I said, shoe mount flashes are better than those little pop-ups that are great for a lot of other things, but in hot, bright, contrasty light, not as much. Here's another one. Use a diffuser. I mean, it's good enough for SI photographers shooting bikini-clad models on a sunny Caribbean beach, right? So it should be good enough for us. And basically, you can have collapsible circular diffusers that you have someone else hold up for you. Now, that's the thing about a diffuser. You need a helper, right? You need a helper. So you can hold that up, or your helper can hold that up between the sun and the subject. So it literally is diffusing the light. And then you take a portrait, and those look great. Generally speaking, when you're doing a handheld diffuser like this, we're talking about a waist-up portrait. What they do for the SI sheets I was talking about, they actually build big diffuser panels, and they're larger. And they're usually, you know, I mean, they could be like 8 feet long and 5 feet deep, and then they are, you know, mounted above the model. And then the photographer shoots through so that you don't see the diffuser, but you definitely see the effects of the diffuser, and they look great. But for waist-up portraits, a diffuser panel and a helper, any helping hands, really, I mean, it doesn't help tame the harsh light. It tames the harsh light. It really does a great job. Now, you can also use that diffusing panel as a reflector if you can kind of figure out, all right, you know, the sun's a little bit at this angle. I'm getting harsh shadows on this side of the face or this side of the body. Maybe if I bounce a little light back in that side, it will even it out a bit, and it will. It will help. The thing that you have to look out for when you're using reflectors on bright, sunny days is that the subject's eyes. Some people, actually most people, are very sensitive to bright light shining in their eyes. Some can handle it, but a lot of folks, it'll make their eyes water is what will happen. They'll be uncomfortable, and I'm going, oh, I'm sorry. All right, keep your eyes closed until right before we take the shot, and then we take the shot. You know, stuff like that. But I think using a bounce light on a bright, sunny day is harder on the subject. It's harder on the subject. But in a pinch, I tell you, it can really help. Personally, I like the diffusion method better, but I think it's a little bit more difficult. You have to have someone to be able to hold that diffuser up high, and you need as large a diffuser as possible so that you're diffusing, you know, the torso on up or more, depending on what you're attempting to do. So diffusers and reflectors, definitely helpful for these harsh, contrasty situations. And then finally, built-in camera filters. And this is something that I played with on Saturday at the workshop. Midday, we were in Sausalito. It was almost too warm, to tell you the truth, for the Bay Area. In fact, a lot of people that live in the Bay Area go, man, it's hot. Well, I mean, it was still in the 70s. But, you know, in the sun, you know, the sun would wear you down over time. And it did feel hot when you were standing in it. You know, I was going, well, what am I going to do? I want to do something different. I didn't feel like shooting black and white. Normally, I do that in these conditions. But Sausalito is this, you know, it's right there on the water, and it has a lot of really neat colors. The buildings are, you know, a lot of blue and white and very colorful, and the people are colorful. And I wanted to do something else. So I used some of the art filters built into my Olympus, my OMD EM5 Mark II. So it's funny the way that it kind of worked out. I was going, well, you know, what am I going to do? And then I was walking by one of the shops, and they had a card stand outside the shop from a local artist who did watercolor cards of scenes from Sausalito. And I go, man, we've got a filter that is like that in the Olympus. Keyline, I believe, is what it's called. So I'm going to try some stuff with that. So I did RAW plus JPEG so I could make sure I could get the RAW too, because, I mean, this really does take it to look like a watercolor or watercolor-esque. But then I shot a whole series. I mean, I shot for like an hour and a half with just this filter on in RAW plus JPEG. And I have a nice little story, a nice little series of shots. And I did a Sausalito sign, and I got some great portraits of people eating ice cream, walking their dogs, you know, all that kind of stuff, posing for shots, you know, with other people. But anyway, I got all sorts of good shots like that. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And I'm actually going to make some fine art cards from this, because the shots that I took, when you put them on like some nice Red River fine art cardstock, will have a very similar feel to those watercolor cards that were in Sausalito. And in fact, this is kind of funny, I bought one of those cards. It cost me $5. But I bought one of those cards. They have this seal statue, Sausalito seal, that's out by the water there. And so I bought that card, a watercolor of that card. And then I took that shot, that same shot, using the built-in filter. So now I'm going to make a card, that same shot, and I'm going to just kind of see how they look. But in camera filters and effects, a lot of those effects do work well in bright, contrasty light. So it's something that I think people forget about, and I think it's something that's really worth doing, especially when you're in a situation. And you can play a little bit, and you can be creative. And you know, that's the last point I want to make here. You know, when you're not in ideal light, then you can play. You can have some fun. You can try different things. It's like you have an excuse to experiment. Well, I have to do something, right? I have to try something. And then you can try these other things. So in that sense, this non-ideal lighting can be a blessing in disguise. And in our case, I have to tell you, after looking at the class presentations on Sunday afternoon, I have to say it was definitely a blessing in disguise, because those photographers did a great job with harsh light. The Digital Story Photography Podcast debuts on Google Play Music. Yeah, I've been waiting for this. So I applied, and I mean, really, that's what I had to do, to Google Play Music quite a while ago. And they said, yeah, we're working on it. We're going to have a podcast area. We're going to channel. And so they reviewed my stuff, and they said, we love your podcast. We want to have it be a part of Google Play Music, and we'll keep you posted when we launch. And then I really didn't hear something for a long time, almost to the point where you start to forget about it. So then today, as I was working on the podcast, I was writing the notes, I get an email, and this is basically what they said. Starting this week, podcasts on Google Play Music in the U.S. and Canada will begin rolling out on Android and be available on the web. The rollout on Android devices will be gradual, so users may not see podcast content on Google Play Music immediately. And among those in the first wave is the Digital Story Photography Podcast. So I'm thrilled to be on the Google platform. And if you use Android devices, or if you're a Google platform user, you know, you're in that ecosystem, our podcast will be available there now, definitely for desktop machines, and it may be available right now on your Android device, and if it isn't, it will be very soon. So, all right, we can reach more people, and those of you listening that use the Google platform, welcome. April 24th is World Pinhole Day. So I was debating on the stories here. I had two stories I was debating between. I wanted something, you know, a little off the beaten track for this slot. So the story that I decided on is this one, which I'll talk about in a second, World Pinhole Day. But the one that I decided against was that it finally happened where a drone flew into a commercial aircraft. And, okay, everyone's sort of reporting on that. So I said, I want something a little bit more fun and unique. And but just so you know, a drone flew into a British Airways aircraft. No one was hurt. I mean, you think about it, a giant 7 and a drone, as long as it doesn't fly into the jet engines or anything, probably not much of a contest. But I think there's going to be some brouhaha around that. I'm not going to report on that story I just reported on. And I'm instead going to tell you about World Pinhole Day. So I saw this on the Photographer. April 24th is World Pinhole Day, a day for all pinhole photographers to get out there and shoot in celebration of the old school format. Right here in New York City, the Phlebographer is teaming up with Lomography for our very own World Pinhole Day celebration with a cool photo walk. If you've never shot pinholes, have shot them, and want to do them in a more social space, then sign up. And I have the link to the Phlebographer story in the show notes, as I have the links about everything else that I was talking about in today's show. Pinhole photography is cool. And a while back, I got a pinhole adapter for my Micro Four Thirds camera. It cost me, I don't know, it was about $25, $30. It looks like a little pancake lens, except instead of a lens, it has a kind of a shallow funnel that leads to a pinhole. Cool, great. I tried it out, and I really like it. It's really fun to do pinhole photography with a digital camera. Now, obviously, on World Pinhole Day, you're going to have everything. You have people that have, real film pinhole cameras that they've built. I'm sure you'll see some digital cameras and all that kind of stuff. But the neat thing about pinhole photography that I do like, first of all, it has tremendous depth of field, right? Because you got a super small aperture, and you only have one aperture, and it's small. Then the other thing, though, it has this look, because there really isn't a lens, right? It's just, light going through this pinhole and projecting an image on the sensor or on the film. And it just has this look that I can't describe it other than that's pinhole photography. So again, it's something that is fun that you don't even have to, if you don't like messing with film, you don't have to go to film to do. You can do it with your digital camera. There are pinhole adapters out there for digital cameras. And if you like this sort of thing, or if you're interested in it, World Pinhole Day is on April 24th. I'm sure there are going to be Flickr pages and all that kind of stuff celebrating. You might want to join in the fun and just do something different. Shake up your photography a bit. Who knows? Maybe really make an interesting image. We have a winner for the Contax 137 MD film camera with 50 millimeter lens. So this was fun. Now, if you didn't listen to last week's show, you probably don't know what I'm talking about. But last week, I made the announcement for The Analog Story, which is going to be the film companion to The Digital Story. So Digital Story, focus on digital stuff, and then The Analog Story, going to focus on film photography. So I made the announcement, and I wanted people to go over there and take a look, and I wanted them to participate, and in part because it's fun, but in part because I also want to hear what people have to say. And so we ran this giveaway for a week, and all you had to do to participate was comment on any of the posts over on The Analog Story. Well, this turned out much better than I thought it would. It did, because these comments from folks were fantastic. And in fact, they're so good that I just don't want to leave them there. You know what I mean? I feel like I should do something with them. Now, obviously, you can go over to The Analog Story and read them. On the various posts, you could do it that way, but I'd like to pull them together some way. So I'm still thinking about that. Anyway, I was just thrilled. So those of you that went over and commented on posts over there, thank you. And thank you for not just saying, hey, I want to win, a free film camera, which would have qualified you, but is not nearly as interesting. You guys actually wrote interesting stuff. So that was cool. So that's the first thing. So then I had to pick one to be the winner of the camera. And it's over now. I did it early this morning. This is Monday morning. And basically what I did was I randomly selected an article. I had them all in front of me and I closed my eyes and I randomly selected an article. And the article that was randomly selected was, A Most Beautiful Break, which was in about that shot. So that was the article that was selected. So then I opened it up and I went down to the comments and then, I just scrolled up and down. This is with my eyes closed. And then wherever the cursor landed after I scrolled up and down a bit, that was the winner. And the winner is Kathleen C., who commented. This is what she wrote about this piece. And by the way, The photograph was of a marina at twilight that I had shot on a break. A commercial, I was doing a job with a digital camera, but I had a film camera with me and I shot it on break. Anyway, so here's what Kathleen wrote. "Very pleasing tones, exclamation mark. I am kicking myself for having thrown out about 40 rolls of film in a spring cleaning accident about a year ago. Good stuff, too. Fuji Velvia, ouch. Kodak Portra, Fuji Superior, T-Max, etc. I thought at the time I would never go back to film. Now I can't get my mind off the challenge of applying everything I have learned over the last few years with digital photography to film. I was shooting in auto mode when I was a film shooter." Wow, cool. And that's the kind of stuff that we were getting on the comments. I mean, really nice stuff. So anyway, Kathleen, if you're listening, all you have to do is click on the Contact Us link at the bottom of the page of the Analog Story, and then we'll get all your shipping information and everything. And I have a great camera for you. Contax 137MD. MD stands for motor drive. We're using those cameras this weekend because we did film shooting in Chinatown, San Francisco Chinatown, over the workshop. And we used 137MDs. They are a blast to shoot with. You're going to have so much fun with this camera. And you know what? Just because you threw out all that film, I'm going to toss in a roll of film for you too. So anyway, thank you to everyone who participated. It was really a lot of fun. And I enjoyed it. And those of you that are thinking that you want to augment your digital photography with analog photography, go over there, theanalogstory.com. This is not about film or digital. This is about film and digital. We're in a new age now. Film doesn't have to be everything to us like it did before. We have digital for precise color and, you know, correcting, you know, distortion, all that kind of stuff. We can do all that digitally now. Now we can just have fun with film. And that's what this site's about. Hope you have a chance to go take a look at it. All right, what do we have here? Oh, my good friends over at Red River Paper. That's what we have. And boy, have I been thinking about them a lot. So when I came back from the workshop from Sausalito, first thing I did was go, okay, what do I have in inventory? Because I'm going to do these Sausalito fine art cards. And sure enough, I've got some very nice fine art matte paper. The way that Red River Paper does the cards is that they're scored, so they fold down to a nice 5x7. They're a little heavier paper stock, and you can get matching envelopes, and you can get the glassine sleeves. You can get the whole deal. I mean, you could start a card business. There's a thing on Red River Paper called the Card Shop, and you can go there and see the tutorials and look at all the stuff that they have to offer. So anyway, I do have some stuff ready to go, and that's what I advise. If you like doing this sort of thing, have stuff on hand, because I don't know if you're like me, but what happens is when I'm ready to go, I want to do it right away. I do. I want to do it right away. And I don't want to, you know, then place the order and wait for it to come and all that kind of stuff. I want to do it right away. So have some paper on hand. And then when you get an interesting idea, like I did in Sausalito, then you can come home and you can print it up right away while you're excited about it. And while the creative juices are flowing, and really make something beautiful that you can put in someone else's hands. And that is what I call art. Red River Paper, they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Well, I'll tell you, I am one tired guy. there's one of the workshop participants, Harold, who's he's a friend of mine. You know, we both live in Santa Rosa. And he caught a shot of me at the workshop that just really summed things up. I don't shoot very much during the workshops that I'm leading because, you know, then I forget about people, right? I get all caught up in shooting. And so I have to, for the most part, just keep an eye on what's going on, keep an eye on everyone. I want to make sure everyone's safe. That's always my number one priority, as they will tell you ad nauseum. But he got a shot of me where I'm sort of at a spot where I can see what most people are doing. Because I like to let people shoot. I don't want to smother you during the workshop. I want you to have fun. I want you to be creative. I want you to fall into your zone. So, you know, I'm watching as many people as I can and stuff. And he got a shot of me doing that. And it's funny. Just makes you think, oh, my gosh, do I look like a proud papa there? Anyway, I had a blast this weekend at the workshop. We got two more this year. We got one coming up, Point Reyes in August, and then Eastern Sierra Fall Color. And I'm already getting excited about both of those now coming off the San Francisco workshop. So anyway, all of you that participated in the workshop, if you're listening, thanks a heap. You just really provided me with a wonderful experience. All right, well, harsh light, I tell you, it can be your creative friend. Don't be afraid of it. Start thinking about how you're going to tackle it so that when you find yourself in that situation, you can just get right to it, get creative, and make some beautiful artwork. Until next week, have a great week. Take some pictures. I'll see you then. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.